Hi. My name's Nancy, and I'm a member of the Theodore Memorial Al-Anon group. This kind of exemplifies what's going on with me this morning. There was two snakes, and one of them was an alcoholic, and one of them was an Al-Anon. And they were down in their hole. And the alcoholic snake came in, and the Al-Anon was really howdy-towdy. I mean, you know, she was just really filling her oats this day. And he said, "What's your problem?" She says, "I don't have a problem." The alcoholic snake says, "Well, I think you better change your attitude. I remember the time that you didn't have a pit to hiss in." That is pretty much what I'm going through with today. I don't have a lot of material with me, and am not really together. So I'm just going to try to tell you my interpretation of what. Al-Anon is a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope that we may become better people, that we may get well from an obsession of control. And throughout the years, some of us have succeeded and others has not. Many times, most of us kind of fluctuate. Sometimes we're do okay and then we regress and go back. So Al-Anon does have slips. We do slip into bad ways of thinking. The 12 steps of Al-Anon. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I'm just feel real humble and grateful that Juanita would bestow upon me this great honor. It's always an honor to be able to get up in front of alcoholics and non-alcoholics and to be able to introduce someone that has lived a program. Your problem and my problem are so closely related because I am selfish, self-centered, and controlling. And these are the problems that I need to work on daily. And I'm sure that Deborah from Gulf Breeze will give you a lot of insight into what Al-Anon means to her and how it has helped rehabilitate her. her life. And with this, I give you Deborah from Gulf Breeze. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Deborah Ciano, and I am a member of the Al-Anon Family Group. Hi, everybody. Well, I'd like to start off, first of all, and thank all of you who showed up here. I know there's a lot of people in the back who can't find a place to sit. And those of you who have come in late and don't have a chair, there's plenty of chairs up here in the front. James and I were talking about the incredible turnout this morning on a Friday morning. You know, you don't normally see 500 or 600 people like this that just show and turn out for the Al-Anon speaker, and I want to thank all of you. And we really apologize for those of you out in the overflow room, and we will try to accommodate you better next year. I'd like to also thank the celebration by the C Committee for inviting me to, it is always an honor to be asked to speak. To share my experience, strength, and hope, and how the program has helped me. And I don't know why I started bawling there just a moment. It was just, I guess it's very humbling for me sometimes to realize how God works in my life. And all of you that are here today are the ones that are supposed to be here. And my sponsor always tells me that there's only one person I'm speaking to, and the rest of you are just going to have to suffer through it. So I thank all of you for your patience. I guess for me, I've been coming to Al-Anon now for only 10 years. And when I say only, that's just a small time. But it's a lifetime for me, because at that point that I walked through the doors of Al-Anon 10 years ago, I don't remember what I was doing before then. I think I was guessing, and I was so busy trying to figure out what everybody wanted me to do and be that I was never truly who I am today. I think I've tried to figure out who I am and live with that and accept that. There's still a lot about me I want to change, and I'm real grateful that the higher power in my life today, who I choose to call God, is very actively working in my life. And when I say that, it's because I choose for Him to work in my life. And I think there, even in my recovery, there was a lot of that I was doing myself. I tried to hang around with the people who told me what they did, and I tried to do it their way, and I tried to be something that I wasn't. I've always wanted to be something stronger, something different, something prettier, something smarter. And I'm coming to realize that I'm really okay just who I am today. I want to be better, and I want to do things differently. And this growing experience of reality that continually I'm looking at. But to qualify myself, and I do qualify for Al-Anon, my home group is the Courage to Change Al-Anon Family Group in Gulf Breeze, Florida. And I started out, well, my life, I'll tell you a little bit about where I started. I was born into the disease of alcoholism. My mother is the recovering alcoholic today, the beginning of my recovery. But at the time when I was born, I don't remember when I was born, I want you to know that. I know people who do remember when they were born, but I'm not one of them. And I grew up, my father used my mother to get his American citizenship. So he pretty much just was in the picture for a short time. I don't remember him in my life. I have a picture of him. I remember him coming to see me when I was 9, but he was gone. So I started out from the beginning with some abandonment issues, but I didn't know I had any. When she married my stepfather, I never really liked him. He was physically abusive to her and to me, and then when my brother came along, he never messed with my brother. And so I resented my brother, of course, for that. But growing up, I was always told, I'm looking at it now, and I'm realizing that I was told in some form or fashion that I didn't know what I was talking about. Shut up. Hurry up. Just signals or messages that you get as a child when you're growing up in the disease. Now, my mother didn't start drinking until she was in her 30s. So by the time she started drinking, my brother was a real sick child, and my stepfather was just, I didn't realize it now, but he was crazy because of her drinking. He's probably crazy anyway, but he was, that didn't help it. And so the physical abuse and the fight, she'd get drunk and say, "Well, why don't you hit me?" And he'd hit her. And I'd go, "Why do you say that to him? Because he always does what you say." And I did a lot of running away and doing a lot of things in my teenage years that I'm very ashamed of, and looking and seeking for things and hanging out with all the wrong kids and doing all the wrong, and I was in Catholic school. I mean, I'm in Catholic school doing all the wrong things, and I didn't know you could lie and cheat and steal and do all those things that you do with the uniform on, and do it around nuns and priests and just pull it off, and I was able to do that, and hang around with the crowd that was, you know, partying, and I don't know, I did that, and I was comfortable with that group. We always wonder why some people go after the athletes. Well, I always went after the alcoholics, you know, where did they hang out, and that's where you could find me. I didn't know that those were the ones out in the field smoking pot, or those were the ones that were running the streets or skipping school, and you know, whatever the deal was, I was there doing that with them. And so as a result, you know, I made a lot of choices in my life. Dropped out of college because he was going to move to Houston, and I just wanted to be with him, you know, another him. And so I left town and just kind of wrote off my future because I convinced myself I'd rather work than go to school. I'd rather make money. And so left town, went to Houston. And then I realized that this person that I was living with wanted to work all the time. And so I decided, you know, I always wanted to be a movie star. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't get discovered. And so I decided the closest thing to that would be to be a flight attendant. That could be the movie star that I could be. So I proceeded to interview with airlines, and I got hired by Braniff International out of Dallas. And started flying and seeing the world. And I decided since I was in Dallas, I might as well marry an oil millionaire. I mean, that's where they hang out, so that's what you should do. So I proceeded on this dating spree of just finding, and there was lots of them, eligible, single, wealthy, young businessmen in Texas. And I was seeking out a bigger-than-life millionaire. But the funny thing about it is when you're a really sick girl who doesn't know who she is, with no education, I was having to figure out who I needed to be when I was with a certain person. Now, this is real complicated because I'm trying to figure out what this guy wants in a woman, and then I'm going to be that woman, and I'm making it all up in my mind. And it was just, I want to say I had a good time, but it was just a crazy time. I was extremely insecure, and I don't know who I was. I was pretending to be whoever I thought the person I was with wanted me to be. So I flew for a while ran into my husband-to-be when I went back home to see my mother. And he was something that I had met when I was very young, and his family was had a very high profile. They were Italian. Everybody thought they were in the mafia. So I thought, well, this would be good. I'll marry into the mafia. Then that is exciting as being a movie star. So by the time I had gone out, now this is in my mind, okay? These are things in my mind. I had already gone out to Dallas, and I was flying all over the world, which is true. I was flying all over the world pursuing a millionaire, and now I was going to marry the mafia. But I was going to have to come home to Pensacola for that. It was just small-time mafia. And he's really not in the mafia, okay, but in my mind. And in everybody else's mind. So here I am. He wanted me, and what really impressed me about him was he just really pursued me. He wanted me. He must really love me because he chased me down and made me marry him, and that was love to me. So we went there. We got married. We were going to have a wonderful future because, see, all he needed was a woman like me, and a woman like me could get him to act right, and he wasn't acting right. He was partying all the time. He was doing all the wrong things, and his family was so happy that I was there because, see, this family figured that I was going to get him straight. So we pursued into this insanity together where I was going to make it all right. And what happened to us was a restaurant later, I got pregnant with my daughter because I figured if I give him a baby, that will make him happy and that will make him love me and then he will stay home and he will act right. By then my mother's drinking had just really increased, and she was working in the restaurant with us, and my husband was partying. He was hiring strippers for waitresses and then going out and partying with them. And I'm pregnant, and he's, you know, partying with the waitresses. I mean, and my mother's back drinking at the bar. I mean, it was just, I was going crazy. And I was told I had a high-risk pregnancy, so I needed not to get upset. And I'm getting upset. I'm having migraines. I'm throwing up everywhere. I'm just not having a good time. And the restaurant is going downhill because we're doing all the wrong things because we don't know what we're doing. And as you can see, the insanity. And he decides after I have the baby to sell the restaurant and move to Dallas. Now, you guys maybe have never done a geographical cure, but we thought we'd try it. And we were going to move to Dallas. That's what it was. That's where he found me. If he just brought me back to where I had started, maybe I would be happy. So we went back to Texas. He got another job with a car dealership. We started out. And what's interesting about alcoholics, I don't know if any of you know that, but wherever they go, they have buddies. And those buddies are real important. And the buddies that he had to hang out with in Florida, he had the same group of buddies that were out in Dallas. Now, he just met these buddies, but they were really important, and he had to go with John on this night, and his wife left him on that night, and he's got to go here. And the same pattern started up again where he was having to party and having to go and having to be here. Well, I figured, okay, we had the child. That wasn't it. What we needed was a house. I was 30 years old. We didn't have a house. I convinced his mother to give us the down payment for a house. If we just had a house, then that's what would change everything. So we got the house, and it didn't change anything. He just kept going out. Well, as his drinking and his drugging increased, we started fighting for the money. It was like the money that he needed to continue here was the money that I needed to continue to pay the bills. And as we started to stretch it, things started to crumble down. Well, at that point, I realized that I was pregnant again. And I'm real grateful to say that at this point, when I walked into the doors of Al-Anon, I remember my mother calling me on the phone. And by now, right before we left Florida, we had picked her up off the floor, throwing up blood, believing that only thing she could hold down was her alcohol, and taking her to treatment. She was going through treatment and going through some type of recovery, beginning her recovery and beginning her fog while our whole world was falling apart and we were leaving town. So that was all kind of going on at the same time. She was then going to AA and beginning to recover. And as she was coming out of her fog and realizing that how everybody was sick in the family, she started sending me this Al-Anon literature out to Dallas. And as she's speaking to me on the phone, I'm screaming and throwing my daughter across the room because he wouldn't come home. And she's listening to this, and she's going, if you don't get some help, you're going to damage your daughter. And if you, whatever damage you do, you're going to have to live with that for the rest of your life. Well, I don't know what guilt does for you, but it does, you know, it does wonderful things for me. It makes me do things I normally would not do. So she had been sending me this Al-Anon literature, and I'd been reading it, but I really just didn't have time to go to these meetings that you guys talk about. If you worked all day like I did and you stayed up all night waiting for him to come home, who has time to go to a meeting? So I just didn't have time, nor did I have the energy. I was extremely depressed. I was extremely angry. I was extremely frustrated. I was hurt. I was betrayed. He was lying to me. He was staying out all night. He was spending the money. And, I mean, I was getting crazier and crazier and crazier. All the things that I had done to try to make our life wonderful were not working. And I desperately was trying to make them work. I'd greet him at the door at 3 in the morning to ask him, where have you been? And, a good alcoholic just doesn't tell you where he's been. And it was crazy. I'd roll over in the bed. I'd be upset that he wasn't there. I'd try to page him. I'd try to call him. I'd call his friends. They'd all lie to me. I'd call the bar. No, he just left. I mean, it was just the insanity of the Al-Anon trying to find the alcohol. And they're slippery. You guys are slippery. There's no catching you. No catching you. But that makes us real, real sick. Makes us real, real sick. Makes us real crazy. And my favorite thing that alcoholics do that I still blows my mind is when they look at you and say, I was here last night. And you look at them and you know they weren't, but you believe them. You're thinking, he must have been, because you guys are so convincing, extremely convincing. Talk about a salesman. But anyway, those times of insanity, you know, and I can't tell you, looking back now, how I was even feeling. I know I was crazy, and I think denial, as horrible as it is a wonderful thing. I think it kept me alive in certain situations when I probably would have blown my mind. I kept telling myself, it can't possibly be this bad. He can't, maybe he's telling me the truth. I mean, I don't know. But when I finally got to the place where I was so crazy, and my mother, I heard her, and I remember standing in the living room. I remember my daughter, I don't know why she was always screaming. And it was just because I was just like this. And it was between 5 and 8 at night, I began this dance that I used to do where I started calling and paging and pacing and throwing and screaming. And it was just crazy time. And I say that to most people, when I started in the program, 5 to 8 was happy hour. And I was literally going into this withdrawal thing because it was, how was I going to get him home at happy hour? And he was planning. Every night he was planning somewhere to go. And so here I was trying to figure out how to get him home while he was trying to figure out how to go. And, you know, to an alcoholic, a pan of lasagna just doesn't get it. And I kept thinking it was the way I was cooking. You know, if I just cooked the right meal, he would come home. And I remember I'd call him up and go, I have cooked this. And he'd go, great. And he wouldn't come home. And I mean, it was just crazy. You start taking that a little personal. Okay? I mean, you just start taking it a little personal. And my self-esteem was so bad when I got here. Because he was feeling so bad. And he was not doing the right things. The inner reaction between us was real negative. I mean, it just was unhealthy. It was, you know, he was looking at me like, what is wrong with you? And I'd leave there going, I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, I mean, the whole thing was crazy. And everybody's telling you to leave, but you love them, but you can't, but you want to. You know, I was homicidal. I was suicidal. You know, I was all of the sidles. And, I mean, it's just amazing I am standing in front of you. I just want to tell you that, and it's amazing that he's still alive wherever he is today. And that is definitely by the grace of God. And I don't joke, because I thought many times about killing him when he came in the door. And I say that because I hurt so bad and I was so crazy, I thought, I'll stab him. That's what I'll do. I'll stab him. Because I had knives. I couldn't shoot him because we didn't have any guns. And but as soon as I heard that garage door go up in that car, I'd go, yes, he's here. And I'd roll over and pretend to be asleep. And I just hate just remembering it. And yet that's part of my life. So into recovery we go. Started going to Al-Anon. Went to my first Al-Anon meeting, sat back by the door. got there just in time, left right at the end. And I remember I was the last person to speak, and I started crying as soon as I opened my mouth, and I said, "Well, who can you call at 4 o'clock in the morning?" And the whole table turned around and said, "You can call me, honey." Well, I was out in Texas, though. And I thought, I ain't calling these people. You know, I was just being dramatic. But from that point, I went to this one little Al-Anon meeting on Monday night. And I went in and I went out, and thank God it was there, because after the weekend of being with an alcoholic, I was really stretched out. But what I see now is one meeting a week really doesn't get it for you when you're living in the insanity of active alcoholism. But anyway, I started out in the program, realized about so many months into the program that I was pregnant, and I really didn't know if that's the smart thing to do. And I thought, I remember him coming in at 3 or 4 in the morning and me going, "Well, I'm just not going to have this baby by myself when you don't even come home." And he said, "Well, you can't get rid of the baby. You just can't do that." And I'm thinking, "Well, I just can't do this." And I'm real grateful now today, because I know in my craziness I was thinking that way. But my son, I call him my Alla baby, because he was really... He is the most wonderful child, and my daughter is too, but he was the first man that really ever loved me. I always say that. He just thought I was just the most wonderful thing. I mean, from day one, he just thought I was it. And you know what? There ain't another man that ever acted like I was just it. And he just adored me and thought I hung the moon till his daddy told him to quit doing that. You know, quit acting like that, son. You know, you don't need your mama, and you don't, you know, the thing, the Oedipus complex, where the mom and the son and the, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, so he stole my son from me and made him act like a boy. But he was a wonderful thing in my life, and I wouldn't have had him, maybe. I wouldn't have had him if I hadn't got into a program. I read something in one of my Al-Anon literatures that says something about that God was in everything, even something that didn't seem like it was supposed to be happening. And it was just I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember it spoke clearly to me that I needed to do the right thing here. And so anyway, I did the right thing, and I see now that I'm glad that I did that. And so... I began my road to recovery, and I'll never forget, and I have to tell y'all this because I talked to my sponsor. My sponsor came down here and spoke in Panama City, and I want to think it's around 10 years ago. It could have been a little bit before or after that. And she came down here and she spoke, and my mother came down here and got her tape. Now, I'm living out in Texas. I just started Al-Anon. This woman comes to your fair city and speaks. My mother gets her tape. She's an Al-Anon speaker, sends it to me out in Texas. And this woman's from Dallas, Texas. She sends me this tape, and she says, "I've just sent you an Al-Anon tape, and you need to listen to this tape, and you need to find this woman, and you need to ask her to be your sponsor." I thought, for crying out loud, that's an alcoholic for you. Wants to pick your sponsor for you. I mean, give me a break. Does she know how big Dallas is? I mean, like, I got time to go find this woman. Let me tell you how God works. This woman walked into our group to do the 12 steps, and she did it over a month. She came in and did 1 through 3, then, you know, went on and on. When she walked into our group, and I only went once a week now. I'm going once a week to my little Monday night meeting, and in walks Vinoy Shaw. Okay. And, I mean, she's bigger than life anyway. So she walks in the door. And I'm going, I mean, my chin, I had to pick it up off the floor and put it back onto my throat. And I said, "Oh, my God, I can't believe that my prophetic mother." And I don't say anything. I just sit there for 4 weeks, and I'm in awe of this woman. First of all, I'm thinking, okay, in the back of my mind, I need a sponsor, right? She's really a big woman. She could really beat my husband up if I needed her to. And, of course, she had all the glitter and all the gold and all the Texas and all the draw and everything you needed to just knock an alcoholic right between the eye. And, you know, I'm still in this sick place where I want somebody to get him. I want somebody to whoop him. I mean, by golly. And, you know, he was bigger than life to me. But then there she came, and she was bigger than life. And it was kind of like, it worked for me. So at the end of our month, I said, okay, what do I have to do to get you to be my sponsor? She looked at me. And, you know, when Vinoy looks at you, she looks at you. And she said, well, I'll tell you what you're going to have to do. She said, you're going to have to call me every day for 30 days. You're going to have to show up in one meeting a week that I sit in. And you're going to have to allow me to get into any area of your life that I choose. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't do this. I thought, okay, thank you very much. And she gave me her phone number, and I went home, and I called my mother, and I said, can you believe this? I said, I can't possibly. First of all, do you know how big Dallas is? How does she expect? I mean, we don't have any money, okay? I mean, my husband's partying steady. We aren't paying our bills. I don't have a job. I did have a job, but I'm going to my one little Al-Anon meeting, rationing my gas, rationing for diapers and formula and baby. How am I babysitter? That means I'd have to go to two meetings a week, oh, for crying out loud, and pay a babysitter and the gas. And I mean, I can't picture it. I just, in my pea brain, in my sick little mind, I can't picture recovery, what recovery really means. My mother said, and you guys have said it so many times, are you willing to go to any length to get better? And I thought, well, I don't know. She said, if God asks you to drive across town, then he's going to give you the gas that you need to get there. I thought, okay. So I started out on that faith journey that you go out on where you step out and you don't see a thing, but you're just going to go there. And we begin the process. And I began. Well, right in the middle of that, her and Jim decide to go to California. Right then, we lose our home and it forecloses. And my husband, it's right around Christmas time. She's leaving to go to California. We're losing everything. And I'm standing there. I'm just in this Al-Anon thing hanging on by my fingernails going, okay, now where do we go? And I said, I looked at her. I ran to her for this profound message for her to tell me how to do this for the rest of our life with her in California and me. I end up in Florida. So we're at two ends of the world, my world. And I'm thinking, how do I do this? And she looked at me and she said, one day at a time. Well, I'm sorry, you guys. One day at a time don't get it. I mean, I'm thinking that I need a little bit more than one day at a time. I need you're going to do this. You're going to, you know, I needed more, but that's all she gave me. That's what I hung on to. I was going to do this one day at a time. And I thought, she didn't give me much, did she? So they left and went to California. We lost our home. And I go home with two babies, a 3.5-year-old and an 8-month-old, with a foreclosed home, $300 in my pocket from a garage sale. I sold everything I could. Honey put everything in storage, but he had a little plan on the back like good alcoholics do. And I'm going home for Christmas because father-in-law flies us home for Christmas. I ain't got nothing. Father-in-law didn't even know we lost our home yet because I had decided I wasn't going to ask for any more money. I was going to let the chips fall where they may lie. You know. And as I went through this, I get home and my mother persuades me that I needed to get my husband some help. That if he didn't get any help, he was going to die. And she had asked me 1.5 years ago about doing an intervention. I'm sorry, I could not do that. That might piss him off. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to piss no alcoholic off, especially the one that I adored. So anyway, because I'm really a chicken. I mean, without recovery, I was really a chicken is what this was all about. I was a spineless matter, doormat, whatever you want to call me. But in recovery, I've become something different. Now, we pursued the intervention. I talked his father into helping me, and the intervention was successful. During Christmas, he went to treatment. He spent Christmas, New Year's, my birthday, my son's birthday, and our anniversary all in treatment. And that was a miracle because he was there for 2 months, which I see now wasn't long enough. But God still has a plan in all this, so I'm still watching that evolve. But he went to treatment, and we started on this new, there was new hope in the horizon. He was resentful to me for a while that I had done that or I was a part of that. And, you know, I had a lot of hope then, but then they did an intervention on me and told me that I needed some help with my adult child issues. So I went through codependency treatment, outpatient, for 5.5 months, which was extremely great, you know, wonderful for me. There was a lot of healing that went on in me from the abuse and how alcoholism had affected me as a child. So I came out of that. But in all of this, honey still wasn't acting just right. He wasn't going to those 90 meetings in 90 days that you guys were talking about because I was counting. So I remember calling Vinoy and saying, well, he's not going to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I go into those open AA meetings. I know exactly what AA is telling him to do. She said, well, then you go to 90 meetings in 90 days, which, of course, I want you to know that didn't make me at all happy. So I didn't go to 90. I went just close. I was in a meeting probably 6 days a week. I was going to my aftercare. I was doing everything. He was going to one AA meeting, one aftercare meeting. And there was a lot of wonderful things that were happening in that. But still, he was still hanging on to that outside life, those old friends, those old places. It was almost kind of like, yeah, I'll do this, but I'm doing this. And, you know, anyway. Well, we obviously were still having problems, and I had some professionals look at me and say, you know what, your marriage doesn't look real good. What are you going to do to take care of yourself? Mental. I got based up in Newark, New Jersey, and then based in Houston, and I'm flying in and out, and we're fighting, and we're recovering, and I'm getting stronger through all this. I'm kind of getting better. I'm standing up for myself and saying what I think and freaking out and all the things that you do. And the wonderful thing about the miracle in flying was that I was able to do the steps with Vinoy in California while I lived in Florida. And let me tell you how God works in this, because I'd fly on a pass or I'd get an LA layover right, and I'm not exaggerating, right when I needed to work a step with her. And it would be time to go over take my third step with her. I laid over in LA. I did my fifth step in an LA hotel room. We went over my eighth step in a restaurant in LA. And everything that I needed was provided for me when I didn't have any money back then. But because of my free flying, I was able to make it. So God provided a way for me because he knew in my heart of hearts, I wanted to work the steps with her. I wanted what she had. And to get what she had, I had to do what she did. And it was hard because I'm way over here in Florida. She's in California. But God provided a way. There was a way because that was truly my heart's desire. So we worked the steps. I flew for Continental. I could never understand why God gave me Continental. Because I thought, you know, the God of my understanding would give me the best. And that was not the best company to work for. So I'll never forget the letter that I received. And I always said it came from heaven. But it had the return address of American Airlines in Dallas, Texas. When out of nowhere, a 2 year ago application that I had mailed the same time I mailed the Continental application had gotten lost in the American Airlines mailroom for 2 years. Out of nowhere, I got an interview for American Airlines. I'm talking nowhere. 2 years later, we have received your invitation, and this is we want you to come for an interview. And for 2 years, I kept going, God, why did you give me Continental? Why didn't you give me Delta? Why didn't you give me something better? But I kept working for Continental and taking that abuse, and he ended up blessing me regardless. So I flew for them for 2.5 years, and then Honey decided he wanted me to come home. So I came home. I thought, okay, I'll take care of the children. I'll play tennis. And I was just really pleased that he loved me so much that he wanted me to be home. And I really had thought that the problems that we were having in our marriage maybe had something to do with the fact that I was around and he needed his space. And I was always trying to give Honey his space and give Honey what he needed. And he wasn't going to meetings like he was supposed to, and they kept dropping off and dropping off and less and less and less. And, you know, maybe once a month I'd do what I'm not supposed to do, which remind him that he wasn't going to his meetings. And but I thought, just in case he forgot, you know. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, I knew in my heart of hearts that his spiritual life or his connection with the higher power, whatever his higher power was going to be, if he didn't have that, he wouldn't be able to stay sober. He wouldn't be able to do the right things. There would be no way. But Al-Anon told me to keep the focus on myself, take care of me, do the things I'm supposed to do, and so I did that. The children and I got really, really busy. They were in a lot of activities. I was really enjoying my life. Or maybe I wasn't. I can't tell you right now because it just took this turn. Last time I saw James was down in Natchez, Mississippi, and I was talking down there. And, you know, I was telling my story. I don't even remember when it was, but several months ago. And I was talking about what has happened to me in this last year. And almost a year ago, my husband started going into this depression. And I was worried about him, but I was real busy. And I'm still looking at it, trying to figure out who did this. You know, I'm thinking, was this a disease? Was this God? You know, and I'm looking at it now, and I don't know. I don't have that answer yet. But the most horrible thing just happened to me a year ago. And my husband was depressed on the couch. And he started getting involved with this little girl at work. She's a little alcoholic. And he thought maybe he was in love with her. And he went into that untreated alcoholism, midlife crisis. I don't know what you want to call it. And he just freaked out on me. I mean, he was crying all the time. He was desperate. He said, I got to go see what this deal is. And I'm thinking, I remember going, no way. You will not go see what this is. You will not do that. I have done too much here. We've been married for 15 years. It was our 15th anniversary, just 2 months away. And it was my 40th birthday, for crying out loud. Isn't that a big deal? I mean, you just don't walk out on somebody who's been with you all this time, went through all of this. You don't just walk out on her and go run off with some teeny bopper, for crying out loud. I mean, come on, right? I mean, I was stomping my feet. You will not leave me. Look at me. How can you leave me? I mean, I was just like stomping around in the bathroom. We were having this conversation in the bathroom. I was not going to have this. I said, I'm as healthy as I can possibly be. How can you leave this epitome of health? You know, I've recovered, I've worked the steps, I'm playing tennis, for crying out loud. He just, whatever. I was like, oh, it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. I remember cooking Thanksgiving. It tasted like cardboard paper. I couldn't eat. I went through Christmas. I don't know how I bought Christmas presents. I put a tree up. I don't know how I put the tree up. And my friend pointed out to me that I didn't miss a beat with my children. I didn't go off the deep end for them. I stayed centered. I did this deal, you guys, with dignity and grace, and I'll tell you how I did it. I did it by the grace of God, but I also did it because of the program of Al-Anon. I did it because of the people in this fellowship that stood by me. I did it because this almighty God, I asked him to help me. How many times I've doubled over on the floor screaming with the pain of this abandonment, this devastation, this man that I loved so much, still love so much, could just do this, could just do this. And the whole thing about it is I knew he loves me. I knew he loved me. I know he loves me. I'm believing he's coming back. But at the time, I couldn't believe he was doing this stupid thing. And he was doing it in front of everybody. He was doing it at his work. And all his friends and his family and everybody knew it was a crazy thing. And he didn't need to be hanging out with someone who was drinking. And he was not sober. I mean, he wasn't drinking, but he wasn't sober. And this was not a good thing for him.
And everybody was looking at him like, you've lost your mind. And he's going, I know. He admitted it. He lost his mind. And to watch somebody literally go crazy is a scary, scary, scary thing. But I knew that it was my responsibility because I had the recovery. I had a relationship with God. And by golly, I wasn't going down in this deal. And I walked real slow. But I was sought out God in every place I could go. My old behavior would have been to run around on him, run after his friends. I mean, they all offered themselves to me. You know, I could have done all the wrong things. And at points, I'll be honest, I wanted to do the wrong thing. I'll be real dang honest with you. I'm not, you know, some little fairy princess up here. I mean, I wanted to go act like a slut sometimes. But I did not. I did not, because I have chosen to do the right thing in my life today. Not because of any other reason, but that's what I choose to do. And that's something, it's a conviction of mine that the program has given me. It's given me morals, it's given me values, it's given me decency, it's given me a basis to live my life, it's given me instructions, it's given me steps to deal with any problem, it's given me a way to handle things. And if you can't handle things in the middle of the most devastating thing you think is going on in your life, then what was all that for in the first place? If it's not there when you need it, it's real easy to walk this walk when nothing's going wrong. Walk this walk when it's going horrible. Walk this walk when it's dying for you down there. Then you see what you're made of. I mean, that's how I see this now. And I've watched it take me from a place where I thought I was dead to a resurrection, okay? And I went through the first 3 months were absolutely horrible. And I remember I'd get up, take the kids to school, go to mass, go to a meeting, and go sit in my friends. And she'd literally just sit there and read the Bible to me. I mean, I just couldn't function. I could not function. And I walked through this walk and waited and prayed and waited and prayed. And when I spoke to him, I treated him with dignity and love. I'd cry and scream and yell behind his back. I'd thrash and hate and all those things. I had those feelings. I had those emotions, but I didn't do them to him. I didn't abuse him. I didn't abuse the children. It wasn't until later that I even broke down in front of the children. They never saw me cry because I was trying to be strong, and then I realized, well, you know, let's don't be the rock here. You know, they need to know you hurt too. So then they saw some tears. And I've gotten more honest with them. They don't know about her, but they, and maybe my daughter does. She's 13. She may know more than I think she knows, but she's never said anything. But I want to tell you what God did for me in all this, okay? Because that's really the miracle. The miracle is that I waited and waited and waited. I wanted to do the right thing. What is the right thing? What is the right thing? God, you talk to me. You talk to me. And he gave me this little signal about real estate. And I said, okay. So I went to real estate school. And this friend of mine and I went to the phone. We said, well, let's see if this is. We were praying one day. And she said, well, let's go see, you know, when's the next real estate school? So I go to the phone, pick up the phone, and they said, well, tomorrow morning is the next real estate school. And I said, well, is there any openings? And they said, yes. So I said, okay, call my husband. I need the money. He said, fine, go. I think that's wonderful. He said, I think that's wonderful. You should do that. So I run down to real estate school and I begin this two weekends of I can't believe that my brain even can function. I'm half the time daydreaming about him, half the time trying to focus on this deal. But to make a long story short, I make it through real estate school. I pass with an 89. I'm talking about a woman who dropped out of college. I pass this real estate course. I come down here in this hotel July 14th of this summer. I take the Florida State real estate exam, which how many people fail it over and over again? I mean, the most smartest people. I'm praying to God the whole time. If you don't do this for me, it ain't going to be done. I pass the state exam. I can't tell you how I did it. I have to tell you God did it because I can't do these kind of things. I get my Florida real estate license. I decide after I'm going to do this that I need to go take that post-licensing course because I need to get that behind me.
And in this course that I'm sitting there, I'm sitting next to this girl. I'm not paying attention to her because she works in Perdido Key, and I'm talking to all these other real estate agents trying to figure out where am I going to go work. Finally, the last 2 days, she looks over at me and she says, "Well, you really need to come work where I work." And I said, "Well, where do you work?" She says, "Well, out in Perdido Key," which from Gulf Breeze, it's about, you know, a 45-minute drive to work, which isn't real convenient in a small town. And I said, "Well, what's the deal?" Well, she takes me there. And anyway, I go through the interview process. And I want to tell you that I was competing with someone with a master's degree in design. This job is a six-figure job a year. Most people don't make that kind of money without a little education. And I want you to know how I got that job. I got that job. And the girl with the degree in design did not get that job. Podunk me got it. And I owe that to God because I'm thinking, He gave me that job because that's what He wanted me to have, because He was pleased with me and He wanted to bless me and He wanted to give it to me. And because this horrible thing has happened to me, now I'm working in this job. And when I was talking in Mississippi with James, I was in probation and I had to fly into Mississippi, speak and leave because I didn't, you know, I couldn't be off very long. And I passed probation. For those following my story, and it's an ongoing thing. And I passed the probation and was able to, the person who got me the job there, I don't know, I see myself in her place one day. And I thought she was the most smartest, if that's a word, the smartest person that could ever be. And now I see myself going there. I see myself doing things. My boss took me to dinner last week and told me, "Do you want to develop something in the Cayman Islands? Do you want to do Panama City or do you want to do Navarre?" And I mean, we're talking little podunk me asking me what do I want? He said, "Pick what you want." And so I stand here in front of you still in awe of what God is doing in my life. And it, you know, it's not about the money. Yeah, the money's motivating. I told him that. I said, "Well, the money's motivating. But it's about a girl like me being devastated from a disease of alcoholism, making some really bad choices in her life, dropping out of school, chasing alcoholic men, doing all the wrong things, screwing up her life, marrying an alcoholic. He's run off and left me. I'm still waiting on him." Just want you to know, Al-Anons are unbelievable people. And I'm still waiting on him. And I want him back because I love him. And when I married him, I meant it. He's the one that's confused. But look what God did for me. Because I said, I'm going to do the right thing. Now, if I'd gone on and done all the wrong things, I don't think I'd be standing here telling you this story. I don't even think you'd ask me to speak. So I'm thinking if you live a good life and you do the right things, that good things are going to happen to you. I just believe that because I'm a walking example. And you know, when this horrible thing happened to me, I said to myself, God, I want to see what you can do with a mighty mess like this, because it's a mess. And so I have turned my life over and asked God to run it. So that's about it for now. And I mean, that's the latest in my life. And I just want you to know that I am expecting things to get even better. I am still expecting things to get better. And so if you're in that humdrum place, maybe just in that wait, it could be just around the corner. Because every day I said, "Okay, God, I don't know that I like what's going on here, but I want you to come in and do something with this. Come on in and do something with this. It's a mess." And He has done things better than I would ever have done. It's real obvious to me. I just wanted Him to come home. Meanwhile, look what has happened to me.
So I want to thank all y'all for listening to me. And those of you who had to stand in the back, please, please, if you'll just get here tomorrow and tonight a little bit earlier, you know, you'll get one of these better seats up front. I love you and thank all of you.
For additional copies of this cassette or a catalog of all our 12-step tapes, call Encore at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website on the World Wide Web, 12steptapes.com.